This is the part that takes... Oh, there we go. All right, now we're live. I was just telling my guests that sometimes it takes a little bit for the stream to pick up. Welcome, everybody. You are in for such a treat today. I am so excited to share my guests with you. But first, I do want to tell you that you are watching Hashtag No Limits, and I am the host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, there is, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And to me, there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally has to dissolve itself into its cells, and then it reforms itself into the butterfly. But that's not all. Its struggle isn't over. Then it has to struggle and fight to build strength in its wings to get out of the cocoon in order for it to be able to fly. And while that is no easy task, of course, neither is busting through limits that society has placed upon you. And today, I'm so excited I can't even talk. I not only have one guest who has busted through limits, but I have four, and those four are part of an even larger team called the Gateway Archers, and I am just thrilled. So go ahead and, oh, I lost my prop. Here's my prop. Give this a thumbs up. Give it a like, subscribe if you're watching it on the YouTube channel, and make sure that you do not miss an episode of Hashtag No Limits or an episode of Friday with Fran. So guys, Richie, Ethan, Chad, and Kim, welcome and thank you so, so much for being on Hashtag No Limits today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So as I told you guys ahead of time, we're going to just go around the grid for my audience, and they're going to introduce themselves, tell us what their visual abilities are, and how they came to find out. See, I can't believe how excited I am. I keep stuttering over my words. How they came to find out about Beep Ball. And if you have any questions for them, make sure that you put them in the comments and I will share them with them. Or if you have any comments for them, make sure you put those in there. And let me know if you're watching Hashtag Live with us or Hashtag Replay. So Chad, I'm going to start with you. Tell us about you and how you came to find about Beepball.
Awesome. My name is Chad Dillon. I have what is called retinitis pigmentosa. It is a degenerative eye disease that slowly over time robs you of your vision. The way that I explain it to folks is most of us have about 110 degrees field of vision. Slowly, like water dripping from a faucet, my vision has come in just like that, to the point where I can kind of see just basically directly at what I'm looking at. So I have at this point about 5 degrees of field of vision. So what I'm looking at, I can somewhat see clearly, but everything else outside of that is blurry. And honestly, sometimes I can't trust it. What I tell people is we're all sometimes sitting, looking at something, and we think over in the corner is a person staring at us, and you turn and look and it's a coat rack or something like that. I have that, but way more of my vision. So I found out retinitis pigmentosa, RP, at 23 years old. I'm a little over 40 now. And over time, just kind of my night vision went away first. And then after that, just kind of everything else. I stopped driving about 5 to 6 years ago and became legally blind at that point. It might have been before that, but that's when I actually became legally blind. My story is a little interesting as far as how I was introduced to the game of beatball. When I was 16 years old, I was in Scouts. I was very involved in Scouts, and I was presented with an opportunity for an Eagle Scout project in the Boy Scouts to build beatball bases. I didn't know anything about it at the time, but where I grew up in Kansas City, there was an opportunity with AT&T here, Southwestern Bell at the time, to build bases. We built 24 bases, so that would be basically 12 sets. And we shipped them all over, and I earned my Eagle Scout project. So that was at 16. The interesting thing is, as I just told you, I found out I had RP. I didn't find out about that till I was 23, so almost 8 years later. And when I became legally blind in 2017, I immediately looked around to find beatball and was able to come across Mind's Eye Radio here in St. Louis and a group that meets on Tuesday nights for some recreational beatball. And now 5 years later, here we are with a competitive beatball team, the Gateway Archers.
So not to age you, but based on what you said, beatball's been around for a while.
Beatball was invented, and one of the other guys or gals can jump in, but it was invented by an employee for the School of the Blind in Colorado in the late 60s. It was tinkered with at the time. Someone in AT&T or Southwestern Bell at the time engineered, developed a ball that beeped. So they kind of worked on it in the late 60s, early 70s. I believe in 1976 or right around there is when the National Beatball Association was formed and teams from all over the United States started popping up and they started playing each other competitively.
That's so cool. So we'll get more into that later. Before I move on, is there anything else you want to tell us about yourself?
You talked about breaking through. I'm a small business owner. I've worked hard to continue to be successful and continue to try and, as you said earlier, break through barriers for the blind or visually impaired fairly young. So wanted to continue to work, continue to do what I could to be a productive member of society. And so beatball is a great way to do that. But, you know, also in my professional life, work hard and do whatever it takes to be successful.
Great. So let's give a shout out to your business. What's the name of your business?
So my business is called the Archive Market. It's basically a convenience store, and I've got some vending machines in the National Personnel Record Center here in St. Louis, Missouri, and North St. Louis County. So there's about 750 employees in the building that I see on mostly a daily basis, and try and have them good breakfast and lunch and snacks and anything their heart desires while they're at work.
That's awesome. Cool. All right. So if you need any of those services, we'll make sure that we can get you in contact with Chad at a later time. Ethan, tell us about yourself, please.
Yeah, my name is Ethan Johnston. Excuse me for my voice. I got a cold that I'm battling. I grew up, I was originally from Ethiopia, but I grew up in Columbia, Missouri. And then I moved to Colorado for school. I found about beat baseball through a good friend of mine. Now he's a teammate. He told me that, you know, come out for practice or blind baseball. And I wasn't really sure about it because I thought it was one of those sports where you hit the ball off the tee and then you go sit down, you know. So I wasn't trusting of it, but he's like, yeah, come out. And then so I went on a Sunday afternoon. I had a basketball shorts and a Kobe Bryant jersey on. And I found out that wasn't the right attire for beat baseball. I went back home, scratched up, bruised up. And it was an amazing sport. It gave me independence to just run freely to the base and, you know, dive for the ball, pick it up before the runner hits the base. So it was, I always said that music and sports have been my medicine. And so to have beat baseball be so amazing part of my life, it was awesome. I mean, I've been in the league, I think 13 years now, and I enjoy it, and I'm happy to be part of the Archers now. I played for Colorado for 10 years. That's where I live now. And then I played 1 year for Indiana Edge, and going back home, making a circle.
That's awesome. So you haven't officially played with the Gateway Archers, is that correct?
No, not yet. Yeah. Okay. 2022 will be first time I'll be playing with them.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. All right. Before we move on to Rich, do you have anything else you want to say?
No, that's it. I mean, as far as, you know, okay. No limits. I mean, it's, you know, we all have our own struggles and barriers. It's just how there's plenty of songs I sing. You know, you get knocked down, you got to get back up, all that. But, you know, I mean, right. You have to have a great support system to help you fight through those battles and barriers. So you just have to have a good team around you for sure.
Yeah. Did you, and I apologize, I didn't space out, but did you say what your vision abilities are?
I did not. So okay, I didn't eat my vegetables. That's what I always tell people.
Okay. For any children watching, make sure you eat your vegetables.
Exactly. I always tell that to kids' mothers, and they should be paying me $10 every time I said that. But you know, that's for next time. So I said earlier, I'm originally from Ethiopia. So I was, to make it short and to the point, I was intentionally blinded to use as a beggar. And obviously I got lucky and blessed enough to be adopted and raised in Missouri. And yeah, we're here now.
Wow. Okay. So can you see anything at all?
I can see light and color out of my left eye. I had 14 cornea transplants. And I have an artificial cornea in my left eye, so I can see light and color. My right eye is prosthesis. I had an eye infection back in fifth grade. And yeah, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that introduction. Rich, you're up.
hey, everyone. My name is Rich Krussel. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. I'm 38 years old. I'm a software engineer. I was born with congenital cataracts. Basically I was born with cataracts, and the doctors, did a few surgeries on my eyes to, you know, try and correct it and try and save them. I wound up losing vision completely in my left eye. And so now I have glaucoma in my right eye, along with, like a swollen cornea, which is why my eye appears blue, but my eyes are actually brown. So yeah, things are just really blurry for me. I can see enough to get around without a cane, but I don't drive or anything like that. I can count fingers from about 4 feet away, and that's it. So yeah, everything's just really blurry, but I see full light and color and everything. I found Beat Baseball. I actually attended a rehabilitation school for the blind when I was younger. And I met a friend there who was from Colorado, actually. And he told me about it, and he kept encouraging me to practice. And eventually I did. I found a team in St. Louis that they're no longer around, but I wound up practicing with them. And ever since that first day of practice, I got hooked. I went into it kind of like Ethan mentioned. I was a little hesitant. I thought it was going to be like, you know, you hit a ball off a tee and then it's going to be a soft, squishy ball and somebody holds your hand to the base. Like, I thought it was going to be this cute, you know, game for blind kids. But I was really shocked how competitive and how athletic it was. So, yeah, ever since that first practice, I've been hooked. I met Ethan when I was his teammate in Colorado for, I don't know, 10 years or so. And now finally we have a team in St. Louis. So I joined the team last year. So this is our second year.
Very cool. Yeah, I do have, for the audience that's watching, I do have a little video. So we are going to have the whole team talk about more about beatball and how it is played. But you've heard about the bases, and you've heard that they don't bat off of a tee. So, and I'm excited to talk to Kim, because if I understand right, it's not just Kim out of her family that is involved with the Gateway Archers. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
All right, Kim, I think you're up. So if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and talk about who the other member in your family that is part of beatball is as well, that would be wonderful.
Well, I have several actually that are on the Archers now, but, My name is Kim Blumenthal, and I'm probably the oldest archer. I'm 51, and I've been playing beatball for several years. My eye condition is albinism. It's a recessive gene, so I've had it since birth. I'm what they call a high partial, so I can see 20/200, but it's still usually a lot better than, you know, other people. Albinism, you have no pigment in your hair, your skin, your eyes. There's different forms of albinism, but it affects your eyes where, like, bright lights are really bothersome and, like, it's hard to be out in the sun and different things like that. So when I'm playing ball, usually you'll see me in, like, this hat that has a covering over my neck and stuff like that. But I've been playing ball, let's see, probably at least 8 years, 8 or 9 years. I found out about it through a friend, and I think Richie was actually even on the first team that I played on for a little bit. and you just get hooked. I mean, I think I've always been a competitive person. So I've participated in all kinds of sports. I've played professional women's full contact football. I've done, just all kinds of things. So, finding a sport that really allows me to just be competitive with everybody else. It makes a difference in your life. I mean, it just makes you feel better about yourself. It makes you have something that you can look forward to. So because it was so important to me, my daughter, who is 15, has been right there beside me most of the way. I mean, she started out as a water girl and a bat girl and all of these things. And now she's pitching for the Archers as one of the pitchers. Her name's Mari. And she, like I said, she's 15. I've also recruited my sister to become one of the spotters for our team. And her name's Cassandra. So it becomes, for a lot of us, it becomes, you know, family, because we need so many volunteers and so many different things that they can do to help the team. And because it's important to you, obviously your family gets involved.
Yeah. Sorry, we had a little bit of feedback there. So your family gets involved. Didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, you're okay. So your family gets involved, and, you know, it just becomes great. And it's a great opportunity to spend time together and be able to, you know, compete and have a good time. And we've become, you know, as an Archers family, you know, we've kind of become family, just as all of us, you know, friends, and that's who you rely on. You know, you got something going on, you're like, hey, what did you think about this? Or, you know, how did you feel about that? And I think we've got a really good dynamic with our team. Everybody gets along. We, you know, we have a really good situation going on.
Kim, I'm going to ask you if it's possible for you to lower your camera a little bit. We are only pretty much seeing, or at least only I am, I'm just seeing like from your lips up. So is there a way to put your phone back up and point your camera down? There, that's better. Now we've got a little better view of you. You have a whole face now. Thank you.
Yeah, there, now we things that you may, I may not notice, you know, it's not.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's, you know, it's just real important, you know, as a team in general, you become, you know, you have that continuity and that camaraderie. And I think we have that as an Archers team.
Would you gentlemen agree with that statement?
Oh, without a doubt. Go ahead, Rich.
You go ahead. I was just agreeing.
Yeah. One of the most important things when we started this team, was that it was truly a team, and Kim plays on a hockey team. They just had a hockey tournament this past weekend with two or three other teammates. I run with another two or three teammates each week in a program called Achilles. So we spend a lot of time together. Obviously we have very similar backgrounds and interests, but it's not just the Archers. It's a lot of different things. Golfing with a couple of the guys this past week, which was interesting. So it's just really enjoyable to be together, not just playing ball, but to do everything we can together, honestly.
So I'm going to direct this question to Rich and to Ethan, because they both made this comment in their introduction that you were, when you were told about beatball, you thought, oh, it's just going to be this little cutesy thing. And so tell us what your first experience, you both kind of hinted at it, but tell us more in depth about what your first experiences were like and how your own limits were busted through and changed about what beat baseball is like.
Richard, go ahead.
So I went into it not really knowing what to expect, really. We kind of did a few practices at my first season, and, you know, it was just practice hitting the ball and everything. And it was kind of just casual practice, but then, so they told us we're going to go to this tournament in Indianapolis and we're going to play against these other teams. I was like, all right, so I'm going to see what this is really like. And we got to the tournament and I was just shocked how competitive it was. These guys are crushing the ball, like hundreds of, not hundreds, but, you know, they're hitting the ball really far. And so I get up there and I swing and I make contact. I hit the ball and I'm now tasked with running to the base, and I'm in a blindfold. I can't see a thing. And I just sprint full speed 100 feet away into a base, and I crash into it and tackle it, and I score. And, like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I couldn't believe I just ran that fast blindfolded, first of all. But I actually hit the base, and I actually scored. And then the rest of the weekend in the tournament, I took to it really well. It sort of came natural to me. I made a lot of defensive plays, and I actually wound up winning an award for, you know, the defensive all-tournament team. So, yeah, like I said, ever since the beginning, I was hooked. But that, like, really, I just wasn't expecting any of that. I just did not see any of that coming.
So what had been your experience? And Ethan, you're not off the hook, so hang on to your thoughts.
All right.
What had been your experience with sports prior to finding beatball?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So before that, like, I've never been able to play a team sport. I did wrestling and track and field in high school. I was okay at those. I had to give up wrestling after my sophomore year because I had to have another eye surgery and my glaucoma got really bad. So I wasn't able to wrestle anymore. And that was devastating to me because I love wrestling. But then, you know, finally being able to play a team sport, you know, I'd never experienced that before. And some of these games, me and Ethan have gone to war with other teams. Oh, yeah. You know, like you see on TV, the professionals, they put everything into it, and they, all the ups and downs and the cheering and the teammates hoisting you up in the air, dumping the Gatorade on the coach. We've done all that, and it's it's amazing.
That's cool. That's very cool. All right. So, Ethan, tell us what you thought going into it and then how it changed you when you actually experienced it.
Yeah. No, definitely going back to the other second question to Rich, you know, in PE, usually if you're a blind person, they kind of set you aside and you get the credit for it. And so for me, I honestly, like, I really do appreciate the PE coaches I had because they always try to modify it. If we're playing dodgeball, they'll set me at the half court line on the basketball court. And the only way they got me out is if they caught my ball, they couldn't hit me. And so my friends were lining me up with the people they don't like and say, fire away straight. And you got him in the face or whatever it may be. And so my PE coaches were very helpful, and I do appreciate them. But when I first went to my first beatball tournament, I mean, it was, again, you know, you're kind of questioning it because you think you're the best athlete on your team, whatever. And then you go out there, you see these crazy young blind athletes just flying around, making plays, hitting the ball. I mean, the ball is 16 ounces, so it's a heavy ball. It's not like a baseball. If that was the case, you could be hitting it hundreds of feet, like Rich was saying, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's just the ability just to have the freedom just to go out and knowing that everybody's in the same position as you are. Nobody has an advantage over you. It was an amazing experience. And that's why I continue playing it, because it gives you the freedom just to be you and enjoy the sport without any limits and compete against other states, even other countries. I mean, Taiwan has a team, Canada, to get in a few other countries, but you know, that's amazing. It's just it gives you confidence when you know that you could be one of the best athletes out there that has the same ability as everybody else, and you know, you don't feel alone, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. So the beatball has definitely given me, like I said earlier, again, the freedom to be independent and play to my best ability.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. So now for Kim and Chad, I want to ask you to explain the game of beatball a little bit, because, you know, we've talked about that Chad built bases. And then Ethan talked about he had worn the wrong clothes when he was wearing shorts. And so and then he said everybody's on equal playing. Your abilities are all exactly the same. So how do they make everybody's abilities the same? Chad, if you want to explain the bases since you built them, and then, you know, just talking about how the game works exactly. And then if it's okay with you, once those two things are completed by you guys, I'll show the video and let the audience kind of get a feel for the game.
Well, how about this? I'll talk about the offense and Ken can talk about the – so basically the first thing to know is that the pitcher and the catcher are on the same team as the batter. And one of the hardest parts or one of the most difficult things in beatball is that the pitcher and the hitter have to work together in unison to hit the ball. We don't use the beeping of the ball when hitting. That's entirely for defense, and Kim can talk about it. But we use the cadence of the pitcher and basically all the practice that we have to know when to swing the bat. I actually brought brought props. So this is a baseball. This is what Adam Wainwright throws 100 some odd mile an hour, or at least he used to. And this is a softball. So this is baseball, softball. This is a beatball. It's a lot bigger. It's about 16 ounces, almost a pound, 16 inches around. So it gives us more of an opportunity, obviously, to hit. The ball doesn't go nearly as far as the other two, but it's a lot easier to put the bat on the ball. So once you've worked out and you get basically four pitches, there's one pass ball in our game, but you get 4 to 5 pitches to hit the ball. When you make contact, you don't know where you're running. For folks like myself who grew up playing baseball, it's very difficult. I automatically jump to first base. But we have one of those bases like I built on first base and on third base. They are 100 feet. They're not 90 feet. 90 feet is in the MLB, but ours are 10 feet farther. So once we make contact with the ball, we actually have to listen and find which base is buzzing. And then we have to get to that base as fast as possible. So you're not always running to first base, not always running to third base. You actually have no idea where you're going until after you've hit the ball. In our game, competitively, you have between 5 and 6 seconds on average to get to the base before it's an out.
Okay.
And talk about the defensive side.
So our defense is set up a little bit differently. We have 6 outfielders, and then we have 2 spotters in the field. So when the ball is pitched, there's someone who will switch on the base. So when the base goes on, you have a buzzing of one of the 2 bases, plus you're listening for the ball. The pitcher is at 20 feet from the plate, and then there's another foul line at 40 feet. So the ball has to go past that 40 feet mark to make it fair. So we usually have 2 players up front that play the front, and then players in the middle, and then kind of to the sides in the back. And we have a spotter on each side of the field, and we've got zones. So 1 through 6 on the right side and 1 through 6 on the left side, and you have a spotter in each zone. The spotters cannot call out a person's name. They can only call out a number, and they can only call it out 1 time. Now, on the defensive side, we can talk to each other as much as we want to talk to each other. So in our game, we do a lot of communicating. There's been several times Richie and I have about collided because we're both going for the same ball at the same time. So we just have to talk a lot. We're set apart where normally you don't, but you know, when you get excited and the ball's coming and you're out for it, it's just kind of, it happens occasionally. You try to stay in your zone, but you know, the goal is to make sure we get that ball before the people get to the base.
Right.
I'll tell you the one thing that's most difficult for our spectators is not cheering when someone hits the ball. It's the most backwards thing that you could possibly think of in any sport that anyone's played throughout their lifetime, especially when your parents are there, your children are playing the game. Someone hits the ball, you want to cheer loudly, but that in our game will get you out, kicked out of the game, or get the runner automatically out because the defense uses their ears and that beeping to find the ball. So we this summer we had a lot of fun with brand new parents to the team, trying to get them to understand that they can't cheer as soon as their son or daughter hit the ball. It is the weirdest thing, but it's vital to our game, and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So not only is it backward, well, not backwards, but it's different, like you said, because if you've ever played baseball, you automatically want to go towards first base. So you have to be paying attention. So you really rely on your sense of hearing in this game. And then, yeah, the not being able to cheer, that would be really difficult for me. And I'm sure most family and friends that are watching, because you're like, yeah, you made contact. Oh, we really can't see that.
You know, there's one thing we forgot to mention, you guys, is that everybody's blindfolded during this whole game. No matter what kind of vision you have, even if you're totally blind, you have to wear a blindfold. And I think we use it so much that we forget sometimes to tell people that. But everyone is blindfolded, so there is no advantage. And when Ethan was saying it puts us all on that equal playing field, that's why. Everyone has to wear the blindfold.
Except for the pitcher. The pitcher can see.
Pitcher and catcher get to not have blindfolds.
Pitcher and catcher do not have blindfolds. That's okay. Well, that's good to know. So I'm not sure if y'all know this, but I had Jason Frazier on a few weeks ago, and he was encouraging me to come out to one of the events and that I could play, because he said I would just have to wear a blindfold like everybody else. And so then my vision would be the same as everybody else's. Now, I'm going to get your names mixed up. I'm sorry, Rich. you mentioned this, and I think this is exactly how I would feel. Once you hit the ball, and once you figured out if you're supposed to go to your left or to your right, to first or to third, I don't think I would run. But you said you ran full force.
Yeah, that's the hardest.
That's one of the hardest things for people. Yeah. So what are the bases made out of? So that, because, you know, as Ethan mentioned, and as Rich mentioned, you know, you're going all out for the base. So I'm assuming they're not hard.
They're foam. They're made out of foam.
They're about 4 feet tall.
Yeah, they're made out of foam and they're wrapped in tarpaulin. The only part of it that's solid is the beeping base that's at the top of the pillar that's about 4 feet tall. But everything else, they're tackling dummies. That's what they're designed for. They're made to get run into, knocked over, beat up. So that's why. Yeah, they're built for their design.
They're comfortable. Okay.
They're comfortable. Yeah. You don't get hurt when you run into it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just, like, I don't know if I could run in a straight line. So have any of you experienced that or known other players that have experienced that?
Every single game. I think we would have doubled our scores this summer if we could have just run in straight lines.
Really? Okay.
I actually had a pretty bad accident on one of the tournaments. I was running off the base path just a little bit. I thought I was running straight at it. I was going full speed, but it was about 5 feet to my left, and there was a guy standing there in the field, and I crashed right into him head on.
Oh,
yeah.
And so you don't have, I mean, the defense has people telling them, you know, like the regions, but you as a runner, nobody tells you like straighten out, go to the left or go to the right?
No, they're not allowed to speak to you at all. The only thing they're allowed to say is stop. If there's about to be an accident, they can yell stop. And they yelled it at the last second, and I couldn't stop in time. The
brakes weren't working.
Okay, the brakes weren't working.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to share... Just, I don't know if I'll share all of this video or not, because it is a few minutes long, and I very much want to focus on what you guys are saying, because I feel like it's so important. But this does give a good idea of what the game is like.
I was about 5 years old when I lost my vision. I have a inherited genetic retinal disease.
I was born with congenital cataracts.
I played baseball in first grade. And all the way up until eighth grade, that's when I started noticing my vision was getting worse, to where if a ball was hit to me, I would see three balls at one time. So, and of course, the coach would always tell you, get the one in the middle, which doesn't work all the time. So I actually told my parents I just couldn't play no more. I couldn't see. So I pulled myself out.
I'd never been able to play on a team sport before, you know, anything that involves a ball. I was going to a school for the blind, a vocational rehab school, and I met a friend there. He told me about beat baseball. He encouraged me to play it and come try it out. And, you know, when I first heard about it, I was like, oh, baseball for blind people, that sounds cute. That sounds like, you know, I didn't think it would be very competitive or very, it didn't sound like it was for me. But then he encouraged me to go out to a practice and tried it. So I came and tried it, and I saw how competitive it was and how fun it was. And it blew my mind and changed everything. So ever since that practice, I found a team and I've been playing ever since.
I learned about beatball in 2010 through my job, Lighthouse for the Blind. So we have a team and we play through the Mind's Eye tournament. And that's where I was introduced to it.
Growing up, really what I wanted to do more than anything was play baseball. I think I was in high school. I was at a school for the blind, and I got to attend like a demonstration of beat baseball. So I got exposed to it then.
Beat baseball is a baseball for the blind and visually impaired. It was invented in 1976, actually by some Southwestern Bell employees, retirees, who figured out how to take the handset and make a loud noise to put it inside of a softball, and the game was created. So basically played by six blind and visually impaired players. You have a sighted pitcher and a sighted catcher, and some sighted spotters, but everyone, whether you have any vision or not, wears a blindfold, and it's a lot of fun. I'm part of the Gateway Archers. We are a brand new team to the National Beatball Association. Mind's Eye Radio is a local nonprofit that helped us make this happen and is supporting us. The biggest difference in beatball versus regular baseball, as far as the batter is concerned, is the first thing is the pitcher is on your team, and their job is to learn your swing and to basically pitch the ball into your bat. Once you've hit the ball into play, you then have to listen. And there's a buzzer on what would traditionally be first base and what would traditionally be third base. And you have to identify which buzzer is buzzing.
Is that Kim?
And you need to run and get there before a fielder fields the ball. If you can get there, it's a run. If the ball's fielded before you get there, it's an out.
My capabilities, besides my vision, is still there. It is more of a testimony for other people, other children that's coming up that went through what I went through. But you can still do things. You can still have fun and still not be able to see that well, and it shouldn't stop you from doing anything that you want to do. So it does mean a lot to me, and my children can watch Dad still be active. So it gives them a goal to say, hey, Dad's still doing it. Dad's still able out here and having fun and just being able to be active. So
I enjoy every minute of it. I try to get as sweaty and dirty as I can. It's really a blessing to be able to play this game. This team, we're all people who live in the St. Louis metro area, and I think that's meaningful because a lot of the other teams in the NBBA have players from all over the country that just sort of come together for tournaments, and they're not together on a regular basis. They're from all over. And so I think what we've got going on here is pretty special.
For a blind person, there's no other experience that can compare to it. Just being on a team, being out, being physical, exercising, be able to run open free on a field without anybody needing help from anybody, being able to hit the ball and run full speed to a base and compete and have your team cheer for you. There's no way to describe it. You have to experience it.
That is awesome. Very cool. So that was put out by HEC, for those of you who maybe didn't know where that came from. Sorry about that. I was trying to get it all shut down and it caught me before I could get to it. So one of the questions I have after watching that is, I saw the bases. I don't know. I'd still be worried about getting myself hurt. So I still don't know that I'd run really fast, but I am competitive and I do like to win. So I may. What happens if, so it's a team of six, but do you have reserves or, okay, Kim's shaking her head.
Yes. We have several people on our team and we have a lot of rotations. You know, everybody learns to play. Some people are better at batting. Some people are better at defense. So just like in baseball, we can have designated hitters, designated fielders, you know, that same kind of thing. I think we're up to nine or 10 players now. So we've got a few.
Yeah, when you're in a World Series tournament, that's a week long. And so you need as many players as possible because diving on the ground, getting back up after a week, man, you can barely walk. So it's good to have a lot of players to use, you know, Tuesdays and Wednesdays and then have your better players going on Thursday, Friday, and hopefully Saturday.
Okay. So is it like, I know, you know, when the Cardinals are in the series, it's, you know, we've got the division playoffs, and then we've got the other playoffs. And then we finally go to the World Series, and then it's the best of seven. What is the process for you guys to get there? And then how are the games set up?
Ethan?
So basically it's not like that. Basically everybody makes it to the World Series. And then I guess there's some officials that make a bracket. So I think depending on how many teams register for the World Series tournament, they have, they set up a bracket A all the way to sometimes E. And so it's a bracket format. So if your bracket, you know, stays undefeated all the way to Friday, and then you play the undefeated game, with the other brackets, and then the last two teams with the best record will be competing on Saturday. So, yeah, it gets hot and wild and a lot of trash talking, even in the offseason.
Double elimination, I think, is what they call it. It's double elimination.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what, so does it run like the typical baseball season, like kind of from the spring through the summer?
So next summer we'll play, or starting next spring, we'll play in a couple tournaments. We'll definitely be in Indianapolis. We're hoping to play in the Chicago tournament, and we'll see where else we might have a small tournament in Champaign, Illinois. So we do travel. Last summer we traveled to Ames, Iowa for a weekend tournament. So there's a few weekend tournaments where anywhere from 8 to 10 teams get together and play, and it's all kind of warm up. As Richie told us last summer, it's all practice for the real thing. And the World Series, you know, is truly the only games that actually count. If you go to one of the regionals and you perform well, then you will be seated higher. But the games that matter are the week that we're in the World Series.
Okay. So what is the Gateway Archers record in the World Series? Anybody know?
I'll tell you this. We went in ranked 17th, and we came out ranked 9th. So that was great for a brand new team.
Awesome.
We won more. We won more games than we lost, but I don't remember the specific record.
And I think Richie has frozen a couple of times. Are you with us now? I think.
I'm here. I guess you didn't hear anything I said.
No, we did not. Oh, no. Look at that. Jason says you were 6-4.
6-4. There you go. Which is really good for a first year team.
Yeah. So 10 games. Okay. So 10 games in 5 days, 6 days. What did you say?
5 days, 4 days, really.
5 days.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, obviously it's, I say, obviously it seems more intense to me than the Major League Baseball. I don't know if that's a fair assessment or not, but.
Well, think of it like this. In Major League Baseball, especially in the playoffs, you can lose a game and still come back. For us, you know, you can lose two games and then you're done. So every game truly matters.
Right. Absolutely. So we have a question from our audience. It says, how long does a typical game take? So do you have 9 innings? Like,
no, we have 6 innings.
Okay.
We have 6 innings, and remember that, you know, in regular baseball, you get 3 strikes and 4 balls, where we're getting 4 strikes and 1 ball, basically. And depending on the teams, sometimes, you know, depending on the pitcher, how much they strike out, you know, it varies the time-wise. But I would say an hour and a half, usually, maybe.
About half as much time as a major league game.
Yeah.
Okay. It still seems more intense to me. and I just
baseball, when you think about it, you know exactly what's coming. I mean, you know, you go straight to first base. So there's just a lot of variables in b-ball that are different. Like everyone on the field in regular baseball can see where the ball's going.
Right.
Okay? So for us, we rely on those spotters. Most of us are listening to where the ball's going anyway. So when the spotters make a mistake and call the wrong number, we're still a lot of times still going toward the beep, you know, toward the ball. But like if it's a high fly ball, it's really hard to hear. So you're relying on those spotters. So when a spotter is out in the field, they'll be calling a number. So if it's a short ball or a ground ball, they're going to call the number real quick, like one. If it's in the air and on the one side, they're going to go one and hold it out so you know that it's an air ball and kind of going out further. So there's a few tricks. There's a few tricks to the trade, but it's still a lot of just paying close attention and getting to where you need to be.
Yeah, I don't want to be a spotter. I feel like that has to be a stressful job because of exactly what you just said, Kim. You could call it wrong and get the wrong zone or get the, you know, your left or your right. I mean, that just makes me nervous just thinking about it. It's hard. I think it'd be hard enough to be the hitter, but I think it would be difficult to be the spotter as well.
Well, and when the ball comes out, you know, you've got a short range, and then as it goes out, it's a longer range. So it may start out in a three here, and then if it takes a bounce or something, it's over in a one, and there's nothing you can do about that. You know what I mean? It's right. Just that's part of the game, and we all know that. And you know,
I think it's more of we have to.
Ethan, you froze, and you were just in the middle of saying something. We'll give him a second.
I think what he was going to say is, oh, there he is.
Oh, there we go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
now we can.
Oh, my bad. So I was saying that, right, compared to regular baseball, we communicate a lot more. So we say left, right, off me, under. I tipped it, charging, versus regular baseball. They say, oh, I got it, or whatever. So throw the first. So I think it's more, we're more detail oriented and a lot more communication. That's what I would say, the difference and similarities.
Most definitely. And if it goes by me, I'm telling somebody behind me, it's by me on my right, it's by me on my left, you know, it's off my foot. So they know it could bounce, you know, or
off my head.
Yeah.
And as far as the spotters, I mean, even though we're the visually impaired blindfolded players, they're players too. They're in the field. We expect them to be just as competitive, just as prepared as we are. And when they don't get it right, we're on them. Just as they should be on us if we make mistakes. So it's not that they're just helpers. They're players too. They're competitive. They want to win just as bad as we do.
Great point. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a couple more questions. So what is the age range of the players? So I know Kim said she thinks she's the oldest at 51, which is not old because I'm almost 51. So
I think they let kids as young as 13 play.
I think it's 12 or 13, yeah.
So 13 to whenever you feel like you can play. If you're 70, go for it.
Our team is a little more on the experienced side. I think we're a little bit older. You know, we don't have too many folks as of yet that, you know, kind of like Richie or Ethan, who had been blind their whole lives. Many of us, our vision has gotten worse as we've gotten older. So I think our youngest is around 25. But there are teams that have players who started when they were 13 are now 18 and 19 and are very successful. So we are looking to have a program, and definitely one of the Jason's ideas that we want to spearhead in the next couple of years is a young archers program where we can start developing talent at a younger age and get them ready to play with the team. So we always have a pipeline of players that are ready to go when it's their time.
Yeah.
And to add to that, I mean, my Colorado team, I had a 68-year-old teammate. And then this year, I think he was 62. He was on the offensive all-star team. So, I mean, it varies as far as age range. We don't really discriminate.
Well, that guy was a former NFL player, though. So we got to have to say that, too. He was an absolutely elite athlete for many, many years.
You're saying he may have had a little more stamina than the average 60-something-year-old?
No, I would never say something like that.
No performance enhancing drugs. No.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. So yeah. I hope this is somebody that you all know and not somebody from a competing team, but they want to know what your expectations are for next season. And then their next question is, who is your rival?
I can tell you what I've laid out for our team. We finished ninth this year, and We played through Thursday, and then we had a placement game on Friday. The expectation that I've laid out for the team, and I'm not the coach or the GM, but that we're fifth or better, that we are playing competitive ball on Friday. So that means we've got a chance Saturday. When we say play on Saturday, Ethan said that earlier, that means you're playing in the championship game. So our goal is improvement, and to be a top five team would be a good progression for us. And that means we're playing competitive ball on Friday. If you have a shot, that's what you want. And that's what we want.
Yeah. So who is the coach? Is there a coach, or is it just kind of a team?
Our coach, his name is Mike Curtis. He's a softball guy, big hockey guy. He plays, he works at Mind's Eye Radio, works with Jason. And he has for probably 6 to 7 years now put on the ultimate beatball tournament that we do with Mind's Eye Radio every summer, where we invite teams from fully sighted teams of people at different businesses here in the St. Louis region to come together and learn about beatball and play a recreational version of beatball, have a lot of fun, donate to a good cause, Mind's Eye Radio, our parent organization, and support what we're doing.
So I think that's the thing that maybe Jason was thinking I could be involved in.
For sure.
Is that. And so you play against sighted players, but they have to have blindfold on, I'm assuming.
Yep. Everyone does. Yes. Well, so, all of the players except the pitcher and catcher.
Right.
And so they don't either. So.
Yeah. When you've played in those, how do the sighted players react?
I've seen a variety of different reactions, honestly, because what we do a lot of times is we split all the players up. We don't actually go as a Mind's Eye team. All the players are split up onto all the different sighted teams or that kind of thing. Also, there's been points before the archers were there that we would get teams together of visually impaired people and play against, you know. And as you heard Jonathan mention in the video, Lighthouse for the Blind always has a team. We usually divide people up so that there's a little bit of experience on some of those teams so that someone knows kind of what they're doing.
Yeah, I could see that would be necessary. And so the pitcher plays a pretty important role based on what we've all said today and as well as my interview with Jason a few weeks ago, because that person has a big responsibility to get the ball where the batter swings. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. That person has to get the ball where it's going in the right position. Every batter has a different swing. So all the batters have to do is have it consistent. As long as your swing is consistent, the pitcher will get used to where you swing it. We've got batters who bat shoulder level. We've got batters that bat the golf swing really low. Richie's got a real low swing. So I think it just varies, but their job is to find where everybody's bat is and get the ball to them.
Wow. That I would be a tough job, and definitely why practice is necessary. So I noticed in the video, Richie, that you were practicing not on a tee per se, but kind of like a tee, I guess. And so when you were practicing that way, is that for you just to why did you use that apparatus instead of having a pitcher pitch to you?
It's a stationary target basically to swing at. It just helps you keep your swing consistent. It's not anything unique to our sport. It's a regular baseball tool that, you know, batters use to hone their swing. But yeah, it's nice for us because it stays in place so that I know that if I hit it every time, I'm swinging in the same place every time. So if I can get that down, it makes the life a lot easier for our pitcher.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. So I don't think we answered the question of who your rival is. Do you have, I mean, we're St. Louis, so I'm presuming that our baseball rival would be the Chicago team, but maybe not.
Oh yeah. We got a couple options for you there. Two of the members on this call today, we stole from another team in Indianapolis. So you could call that team our rival, the Indy Edge. Okay. We are attempting to start a rivalry with Chicago because that's just fun. But we got beat by a team in Atlanta Chaos this summer. We'd really like that game back. We could probably come up with two or three rivals. As far as I'm concerned, anybody that we come against is our rival, and we want to beat them all.
Sure, sure. Well, but, you know, there's always that one team that you just want to beat a little bit more than the other ones.
I think some of us, and it's going to be different for each player probably just for different reasons, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the people that are on the Chaos team I used to play with, and it would just thrill me to death for us to just smash them. You know, we have a lot of smack talk when we're playing. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, on the field, you're against them. Off the field, you're friends with them. You know what I mean? It's and that's one of the great things about the World Series. You get to meet a lot of people, and you get to meet a lot of visually impaired people that share the same issues that you have, that share some of the same problems that you have, you know, good and bad. And it's just great to be able to, Kalari Jackson is from Chicago, and she's all the time, you know, we're harassing each other all the time back and forth. But we play together during the World Series. There's a game called The Wool. It's the women of our league, because a lot of times, obviously, the guys are usually a lot stronger than the girls. They usually get more playing time and that kind of stuff. So a lot of the girls that are playing in our wool game don't play as much as probably I get play time and Kalari gets play time. And so it's a time for the girls to really get to shine. And it was really awesome. We divide up. We have the divas and the bombshells is what they call them. But our pitchers were both on the divas team this year. And this is the first time that the divas won. But it's great because the girls actually get that opportunity to compete and really have a good time doing it. So just that camaraderie on and off the field. You know, even though, you know, we may have some real issues with people on the field, off the field is a different story.
Yeah. And to me, that's sportsmanship, you know, is that you still remember that those people you're competing against are people first, and, you know, that you just focus on that concept. So guys, oh my gosh, this has been such an amazing hour, and it has been almost a full hour already. And I thank you all so much for your time. We do have just a little bit of time left. So if there's anything, if you could each give maybe one final comment or encouragement or shout out to your business again, or, you know, something that's coming up. And this time I'm going to go in reverse order. So this time I'll start with Kim and then Rich and then Ethan and then Chad.
I think that for me, I think beatball is just first of all, it's my stress relief. I was in education as a teacher, and then I decided to become a stay-at-home mom. And I'm a foster parent, and I have been for 20 years. And so I have at home 8 kids and 4 grown kids. So that's my life. So sports have been my way to kind of get away and be able to get that kind of stuff just out there.
Yeah.
And so this is one of the things that my daughter and I get to share and, you know, get to really be able to be connected with. And so I think for me, part of it's just being able to be family. And like I said, we, as an Archers team, are all of us, I feel like, are family to each other anyway, but it's great to have that camaraderie.
Awesome. Thank you. Rich?
So you talked in the beginning of the show about, like, you know, breaking barriers and everything. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's more about just feeling normal, I guess. Being blind, you can't just go and join a recreational softball league. You won't be able to play. So, like, this is part of what helps me feel normal. I get to play a sport and, you know, enjoy teammates and all the benefits of, you know, playing team sports. And it's meant a lot to me because, you know, I my whole summer revolves around beat baseball. I plan my vacation and my time off work around it, and I bring the family, and we've got to travel all around the country, and I've met so many wonderful people and experienced so many cool things, and yeah, it just means a lot to me.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Ethan.
Yeah, I mean, everybody said a lot of things I agree with, but I mean, it's, again, just having a team and being able to compete. You know, I know when I was in high school, I'd go to high school basketball games and baseball games and football games, and that's one thing I wanted to be a part of, but you know, to have this opportunity to be on the team and compete and trash talk and all that, and, you know, win some and lose a few, just baseball is, it's a great sport. And, I'm appreciative of, you know, being a part of the Archers, of course, and hopefully we can do some great things and beat Chicago.
Yeah.
And fight for that second place in 2022.
Thank you very much. That's awesome. And Chad.
Well, St. Louis is a baseball town. We love our Cardinals and we love baseball. And you know, I'm just really excited for all the support we've gotten in our third year as the Gateway Archers. And we're getting ready for Beaumont, Texas next summer. Oh. So we got our new uniforms here, hats here that Mike's going to be really excited about. And what I would really hope is that we get all the support we can. It is you know, no limits in your show. Thank you so much for having us. And we just we love what we do. And playing beat ball is about as much fun as anybody could possibly have, whether you're sighted or not. We're out there putting it all on the line, and we're going to do everything we can to show St. Louis and our baseball community that baseball's for everybody, whether you have vision or not.
That's awesome. And we do have a comment. Somebody loves your hat, your new cowboy baseball hat. All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining. Thank you, Jason, L.A., and Demetrius. Jason says we're not wearing cowboy hats. Nice try. All right. Thank you again, everyone, for joining us. And thank you to my guests today. This has just been an absolute joy for me. And I'm so thankful that you are all with me today. Have a great week, everybody.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.